Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the first of six very special year-end editions of the Three Martini Lunch, our much-awaited year-end political awards. Jim and I are sitting here in virtual tuxedos and having our...
Virtual? What, you mean I didn't have to get dressed up to record a podcast?
Oh, man. And we've got our crystal martinis to hand out here for six consecutive episodes, and there will be obviously three martinis each time. Today we'll be looking at most underrated, most overrated, and most honest political figures. We start with underrated, and Jim, regardless of what you think of him, regardless of what you think his presidency might look like, no one thought Donald Trump was going to run for president. Then he ran for president. As he announced for president, everyone said, well, you insulted Mexicans, you're done. He only grew in the polls. Then he had a big fight with Megyn Kelly, and he only grew in the polls. Then he called for a temporary ban on all Muslim immigration, and he only went up in the polls. And no matter what happens, I'm missing a lot of controversies in between there, of course, and controversial statements. Everyone assumed Trump would flame out over and over again. We assumed it would happen if he even got into the race at all. It may still happen, but over the 6 months of this candidacy, we just assumed it was going to implode pretty much every other day. And to this point, it has not. He may not be the nominee. He may very well not be president, but he has absolutely exceeded most expectations this year.
That's a really good choice, Craig. I went in a different direction, and I'm glad I didn't, because it would have meant saluting Donald Trump. But here's, I actually think my nominee is as strong. I think everybody underrated Matt Bevin, who is now the governor of Kentucky. There was good reason for skepticism. This was the guy who took on Mitch McConnell in 2014 in the GOP senatorial primary, and he pretty much got squashed. And there was a very easy kind of description to look at. We've seen this before. A guy who's successful in business is pretty conservative and thinks that, you know, going into politics is going to be easy. And we don't knock off the, at that point, Senate minority leader. Goes into the race, and it's a lot harder than it looks. And Mitch McConnell has this huge institutional advantage and this financial advantage and, you know, wins the primary. And so people kind of dismissed Matt Bevin as this guy who was this Tea Party challenger, didn't amount to much, runs for governor. There's a four-way GOP primary, and he wins the primary by 83 votes, right? So everybody's ready to write him off. The Democrats control the governor's mansion in Kentucky for a really long time. Well, it turns out he was actually a pretty good candidate. A lot of people liked the African-American running mate he had as lieutenant governor. He stood by Kim Davis when everybody else thought that was a political suicide. He runs against Obamacare. The Democrats are totally convinced themselves that it was popular in the state. But one of my favorite things he did is the obvious joke was like, well, if he wins the governorship, it's going to be the most awkward relationship with the senior senator that you've ever seen, because Bevin had just tore into Mitch McConnell. Well, at some party gathering, he shows this video that has the 1960s song Happy Together, and it shows him waking up in the morning with a Mitch McConnell t-shirt. So his wife says, honey, we need to do laundry. So Matt Bevin takes off the Mitch McConnell t-shirt to show that he's got another Mitch McConnell t-shirt on underneath. They show him reading Mitch McConnell's book. He's getting a Team Mitch logo tattooed on his left arm. And then it looks like he's talking to McConnell on the phone, and his response is, no, you hang up first. No, you hang up first. And oh, by the way, Mitch McConnell did what he could. He told the RGA to send more money in the last couple of days, the Republican Governors Association. And McConnell sent his people out to help get out the vote on Election Day. And Bevin ended up winning by like 9 percentage points. It was a near landslide. So also one great indicator of how wrong the polls were, that they had him trailing throughout. I think there's a serious question to be asked about polling into the modern era. But Matt Bevin was a guy everybody thought nobody had much of a chance. It was kind of a missed opportunity for Republicans. And it turns out he was exactly what the party needed to win big this year.
Absolutely a great choice. You're right. He was written off certainly by the establishment. Even a lot of Republicans in Kentucky who intended to vote for him didn't think it was going to turn out as well as it did. And as you mentioned, it wasn't even close. Ultimately, bordered on a landslide there in Kentucky, which is obviously a red-leaning state. But given the tea leaves going in, he did much, much better than expected. And it could be a very interesting 4 years with Matt Bevin there in Frankfurt, if not 8 years. So On to the most overrated political figure. And I have a feeling I'm going to catch a lot of flack for this one, because you could obviously go with Obama. You could go with Hillary. I gave it to Hillary last year because she's so bad at politics. But one of the things I thought about in this one, Jim, is someone who's got the biggest possible platform and then not using it for the most obvious issue they should use that platform for. Pope Francis came to the United States in September. And, of course, his visit every step of the way, coverage, 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 round the clock on the cable news channels. He didn't take a step without every TV camera being there. If he scratched his ear, there was a panel discussion on it on just about every cable channel. And there's a lot of reasons to like Pope Francis. He obviously has a great heart for the poor. He reaches out to people who you don't normally see people in his stature reaching out to, making it clear that he is sending a message that God believes that every life has value. And that is great. But when he came to America, it crystallized one of the things that's very frustrating about him. He's had these statements over the past couple of years where, yes, the media wants to interpret it one way, and then there's a cottage industry of people saying, no, this is what he really said. But that's not why I'm giving him the award. Then there's the political issues that he gets involved in that we as conservatives aren't particularly fond of, like climate change and wealth redistribution. And so that's a bit frustrating, but that's not why he gets the award. He gets the award because he came to the United States and had three huge chances to talk about the most important issue that's going on in the Christian world right now, and that is the genocide against Christians in the Middle East. He came to the White House, made a statement, never even mentioned it, gave an address to the joint session of Congress, and all he said was, quote, "Our world is increasingly a place of violent conflict, hatred, and brutal atrocities committed even in the name of God and religion. We know that no religion is immune from forms of individual delusion or ideological extremism. This means that we must be especially attentive to every type of fundamentalism, whether religious or of any other kind." We could have gotten that from President Obama. Then at the UN, he talked about it more, where he said, "I must renew my repeated appeals regarding to the painful situation of the entire Middle East, North Africa, and other African countries, where Christians together with other cultural or ethnic groups and even members of the majority religion who have no desire to be caught up in hatred and folly have been forced to witness the destruction of their places of worship, their cultural and religious heritage, their houses and property, and have faced the alternative either of fleeing or of paying for their adhesion to good and to peace by their own lives or enslavement," which is better. But in that speech, he spent paragraph after paragraph on climate change and wealth distribution, and that was pretty far down into the speech. There is a genocide going on. There are heads being severed. There are people being massacred by the dozens over there. This is the critical issue that he needs to be focused on, and he barely brought it up.
You know, Greg, when you first mentioned that, I really thought, uh-oh, here we go. And indisputably, you're going to catch hell for that, no pun intended. But I think that's actually a really well-argued case for arguing that Pope Francis is the most overrated political figure of the past year. Nonetheless, please direct all criticism and damnation to Greg Columbus, care of Radio America. I went with a very easy pick, and one that'll probably be an audience pleaser, Jeb Bush. I went back to look at what I'd written in January. And let's point out, Jim Garrity, alleged political expert, said that the top tier included Rick Perry, Scott Walker, Bobby Jindal. Didn't even put Trump in there. I had Rubio in the top tier as well. But let me look back, see what I'd written about Jeb Bush back in January. Let's not even get into the immigration, Common Core, business ties, or family dynasty issues. The boss, meaning Rich Lowry, recently labeled Jeb Bush a pre-Obama conservative, an accurate way of describing his gubernatorial record. But the pre-Obama era of American politics feels like a long time ago. Republican primary voters, particularly conservative ones, think that the Obama presidency is the worst calamity to hit America in their lifetimes, and they fear it is doing permanent damage to our national values, identity, and standing in the world. GOP primary voters are going to want a fighter. Give me a little credit for getting that right. Do they feel like Jeb Bush has been leading the fight against Obama? Now, for all that I got wrong, I think it's safe to say Jeb Bush never gave any impression he was a fighter, and that kept him from really getting off the ground this cycle. So ultimately, all the money, the family name, the connections, all that, Jeb Bush turned out to be an enormously overrated presidential candidate, and I'd argue the most overrated political figure of the year.
Excellent choice. Excellent choice. Yeah, he was almost by some considered to be coronated early on, even despite the fact there were a dozen and a half candidates coming up onto the stage at various times. But he just never really got it going, and the more people heard him, the less they wanted him. So we'll see what happens over the next several weeks here before the first votes are counted. But it's definitely not going the way he expected it to. So on to the most honest political figure. And I make the joke every year, Jim, that this is the shortest list of nominees to choose from. And I choose one that we featured in the Good Martini shortly after the San Bernardino attacks. And that's Nebraska freshman Senator Ben Sass. He gave a great video that day talking about who we are at war with, and the most important thing to do is to define who we're at war with. It's radical jihadism that wants to take away our freedoms, wants to take away our Western values, but also not who we're at war with, and that's every single Muslim in the United States or around the world. Before that, on the exact one-year anniversary of his election to the U.S. Senate, he made his very first floor speech, waited almost an entire year before taking to the floor, and basically went on this very well-argued explanation of why the Senate is broken and why the American people don't trust people in the United States Senate anymore. He talked about the fact that he's visited with different members of the U.S. Senate, and every one of them believes that the Senate is not focused on what it needs to be on. And he says he's hearing the exact same thing from his constituents back home. And here's how he explained that.
To the Republicans, those of us who would claim that the new majority is leading the way, few people believe it. To the grandstanders who would try to use this institution chiefly just as a platform for outside pursuits, few believe that the country's needs are as important to you as your own ambitions. To the Democrats who did this body great harm through nuclear tactics, few believe that bare-knuckled politics are a substitute for principled governing. The people despise us all. And why is this? Because we're not doing our job. We're not doing the primary things that the people sent us here to do. We're not tackling the great national problems that worry our bosses at home.
The people despise us, and they're right. That's not exactly the first speech you expect to hear from a senator. He goes on to say this is not a call for less fighting, but more meaningful fighting. This is a call for bringing our A game to the debates on the biggest issues here. He says we need Socratic seriousness, putting the best possible construction on arguments, even and especially if one doesn't hold those positions. Our goal is not to attack straw men, but to strengthen and clarify meaningful contests of ideas. And he talks about the fact that everybody's perpetually preparing for the next election, both in terms of money and policy posturing and so forth. So good start, Ben Sass. You pretty much got it dead on there.
That's a really good choice, Greg. I actually went in a different direction. Trying to figure out, you know, talk about honest political figures and someone who tells people things they don't want to hear. I went with Jim Webb, because Jim Webb told Democrats a lot of things they didn't want to hear in his lone appearance in the presidential debate for the Democrats. For example, he said people deserve the right to defend themselves and was the only defender of the Second Amendment on that stage. He said we live in a dangerous world and have to be concerned about the rise of China. Never mind Democrats. Hard enough to get Republicans to pay attention to that issue. He said all lives matter, not just black lives matter. He was the only candidate on that stage willing to say when given that stark choice. He told Bernie Sanders the Congress was never going to pay for his crazy expensive ideas. He said the enemy he was proudest to have was the Viet Cong who tried to kill him. And of course, that guy's not around anymore. Now Jim Webb got tossed out of his party. He is still running as an independent. I understand his supporters will be meeting next week in a phone booth. good luck, Jim Webb. We salute your honesty. But clearly, there was never a home for you in the Democratic Party.
Certainly not in 2016. That's for sure. They put up with him in 2006, and by a few different quirks, he got into office. But he realized he probably really wasn't among the people who thought like him when he decided not to run for re-election in 2012, and he found out the hard way that it's even worse now in 2016. So, Jim, congratulations, I guess, to our recipients today. Maybe the overrated people aren't too happy about getting the awards, but nonetheless, there's a lot more to give out, and we'll do it again tomorrow on Christmas Eve. Talk to you then.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and be sure to tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.